listened to this broadcast for any length of time, you know one of my three or four top banes of existence is the government school system. And sometimes I've yelled about it. Sometimes I've talked plain about it. I don't know. We're going to have a good conversation. Our next guest, he's done a variety of things. He's voiced over the book Crimes of the Educators. He's done a voiceover for that book. He's written a lot of things. He's been involved with the New American. We love the New American. The NewAmerican.com/School of Darkness is a is his latest. I believe it's his latest work. It's the one we're going to talk about the most anyway today. The NewAmerican.com. You can see contributor Daniel Natal, N-A-T-A-L is his last name. It's a pleasure to talk to him. Daniel, welcome to the Power Hour.
It's a pleasure to be here, Daniel. And just for your audience's sake, we're both named Daniel. So if that gets confusing, you know, please, you know, don't send any comments.
Yeah, Daniels are wild today. I won't forget your name. I mean, no matter what, I will not forget your name. So we're on board with that. We had a good conversation before we went live. I don't quite know where to start. I'll just ask an open-ended question. Tell us about School of Darkness and your work on New American.
Okay, yeah, I basically do news analysis there and videos, and one of the latest videos was a book called School of Darkness that I covered, which was written in the 1950s by an ex-communist named Bella Dodd, and it was just really fascinating to me because in reading her book that was written in the 50s, she was kind of recounting her activities as a communist recruiter in the 1920s and 30s, and I was looking at all the similarities between what she was doing then, the verbiage, the slogans. For instance, you know, if you talk to any professor today, they'll immediately reflexively talk about social justice this, social justice that, like unironically. And most people hearing that term don't know that that was one of like Lenin's favorite terms. He would use it like 10 times a speech. You know, Fidel Castro, Trotsky, they would use these terms. And so one of the, as I was reading her book, I'll just read it verbatim. She goes, "The Call was a socialist publication. That paper gave a new turn to my thinking. I sought other copies. I felt my heart beat with excitement as I read the articles on social justice." And so this was like 1920, and they're using the phrases social justice, or she uses the phrase white chauvinism for what we call white supremacy today.
White privilege. You know,
Yeah, exactly. And so it was just fascinating to me seeing how she seeded, like basically her job was to seed the teachers' unions with communists. And, you know, over 100 years, you see the effects.
This is fascinating. I think it's a very important work. You're telling me that basically the school system or society is beyond school now. We hear the term social justice now in Congress's George Floyd. Did you hear the beginning of the show? I don't know if you listened to the very beginning of the show today.
No, I missed it.
Okay. Well, I went to Google. I didn't know we were going to go here, but I'll go back here. This is so important. I went to Google and I just typed in definition of social justice. And I've done this several times on the show and read the definition. And then below is a Wikipedia definition. Here's the definition. I'm going to read it again. This is, again, not me. This is not Daniel Natal. This is not me, host of the show here, two Daniels. This is Google. Justice in terms of the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. That is the definition of social justice. Then it gives a sentence, like, you know, in a dictionary, it'll give a sentence, you know, use the word in a sentence. Individuality, this is quote, individuality gives way to the struggle for social justice. What's individuality? Again, your individual endowment, who you are, endowed by your creator. It's the Declaration of Independence. It's the Bill of Rights. It's America. What is social justice? Distribution of wealth, distribution of opportunities, white privilege, white chauvinism, this whole, the struggle of the unwashed masses to come to some equality. That's communism.
Mm-hmm.
Comment on any of that or any of those definitions. Any comment you have?
Well, I did a video called The Teaching of Fake Ethics, and I cover kind of the deceptive kind of ploys that they use. And if you read Aristotle talks about justice being giving someone their own due. Right. So if you work for 2 hours, you get paid for 2 hours. That's Aristotle's definition of justice. The Scottish philosopher David Hume says the same thing, you know, that justice is getting your own due. Social justice is getting someone else's due, where you don't necessarily work as hard as the other person, but you get, you know, redistributed to you someone else's, you know, resources. And so, like, I talk about, like, the deception. Like, Robert Cialdini had this great book called Persuasion, and he's kind of an expert on marketing and public relations and stuff. And so his book Persuasion, he talks about, as an example, when gay marriage was failing, they tried it in the most liberal state in the union, California, and it failed. You know, it wasn't polling very well. So then they decided to take the word gay out. And they were like, okay, so how do we get the numbers up on this polling? So they came up with the phrase marriage equality. And so they ran that through some focus groups. They realized nobody knew what it meant because it was a new made up term, right? So they went out in polling and they said, are you for marriage equality? And everybody's like, I'm for equality. And they didn't even know what the term meant. So then when the numbers came up a little bit, they ran to the media and said, see, everybody's now for gay marriage. It was so popular, we had to take the name out. We had to take the word out. But the point is that deception of equality and marriage equality and people thinking they were saying, oh, I'm for equality, you know. And so they did the same thing with justice and social justice. So people think, hey, social justice means justice. Sounds the same, must be the same, but it's not. It's a totally different concept. As for instance, in the video that I did on the teaching of fake ethics, I talk about how in Germany there was collective punishment, right? So like the Warburg brothers offended Hitler, you know, they happened to be Jewish. So the idea that you get to beat up or throw a rock through the window of a Jewish, you know, cobbler's store, you know, just because he happens to be the same demographic as these bankers, we all roundly, you know, said was evil. You know, we don't believe in collective punishment. Collective punishment is evil. And so the concept of social justice is the concept of collective punishment. And so they were making these excuses. I talked to a young radical who was a member of Antifa, and he was telling me, you know, at first I was against the looting, but then I realized that it was, you know, for social justice. It was for this race riot that happened in 1921, you know, and in Black Wall Street in 1921. And he was like, and this is why were justified a century later in looting this Walmart 1,000 miles away. So I was like, okay, so your idea of justice is basically looting a store, breaking things, burning down buildings in a different century, in a different, you know, state. So I said, imagine punishing someone not for the crime they did, but imagine punishing the entire zip code. And then not punishing the entire zip code, but punishing the wrong zip code. That's social justice.
Did you get any further comment? Did you bring this up to this individual, and what did they say?
Yeah, I mean, he was entirely impervious. He was a young radical, and he came from a family of radicals. And but it was just interesting hearing his kind of, you know, intergenerational radicalism.
Intergenerational.
By his own words. Yeah.
When you talk to somebody like that, I'm not even going to. I don't want to say anything because I just want to get your feel. When you talk, what impression do you get when you have a discussion like that with somebody like this individual? What goes through your mind?
He seemed like a lost young man, like he hadn't really been given any rooting in ethics or civics, and he kind of was just going with his kind of like feelings rather than logical or rational thought. But at rock bottom, I kind of also sensed that a lot of these young people, you know, are searching for something. Like, basically, spirituality had been taken away from them, and they had just been offered materialism, right? And that's not the fault of any particular person. I mean, it's just the historical phase that we've gone through since the Industrial Revolution. You know, the church has kind of been sidelined. It used to be the center of our society. So everybody had this spiritual sense, and now they're being told, okay, tube socks at Walmart is, you know, you're a consumer now. You're not like a spiritually. So they're struggling for something, for some meaning. And so con men, you know, kind of take advantage of that and weaponize them and marshal them in directions that they shouldn't be marshaled at. You know, I did a report on Dostoevsky, the Russian author in the 1860s, who wrote a book called Notes from the Underground. And Russia at that time period was going through a very similar crisis, where you had all these young people who had been, you know, kind of shunted out of the family farms. They went to the cities, to get jobs in the new factories. They were lonely. They were isolated. They were cut off. And so this nihilism grew, this hatred of the society. And I thought I was reading stuff from Social Justice Warriors Today. I was reading this document from 1864, and he was talking about how they start to become anti-logical. They become irrational. They become hateful toward the society that they're, you know, living in. And they start, you know, kind of being perverted toward the worst forms of socialism, as Gustave Le Bon said in 1896 in France, you know. So you see the same thing happening in Russia. You see the same thing happening in France. You see, you know, this nihilism, this search for meaning, and it just gets perverted into this horrible, you know, kind of mutant version of a religion, you know, where you have these, for instance, young women today, where they're like, I'm not going to have babies for the carbon footprint. Babies are bad for, and, you know, like a nun, like a secular nun, or the end of the world is coming, except not in a Christian sense, but through global warming. And you can offset it by paying indulgences or, i.e., you know, taxes to the UN, you know. So it's this very perverted version of religion, you know, and that's how I see it anyway.
So we have an inherent need to find meaning or something bigger than ourselves. And because our society is choking the traditional definition of that out, they're looking for anything else. So somebody else comes along as a social justice, equality, and look at all the injustice. And you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to look at our society and see injustice. There's injustice everywhere. So then they put a marketing campaign, a spin on it, put a tag on it and say, look, this is what we're fighting. Here's the solution. Here's our new, the new offering, the new religion, so to speak. So that it's basically a false, almost a false religion.
Yeah, that's how I see it. And there were actually two authors that jumped out at me. One was Gustave Le Bon in 1896, as I said, in France. He was a social scientist, and he did the first book on mass psychology called The Crowd. And in it, he talks about what was happening in France in 1896, and he said that mass college had created a bunch of displaced people where they felt like they were too good to work in the trades, but there weren't enough jobs, white-collar jobs. So all of a sudden, you had a bunch of underemployment. And he said that this made them hate their society. Wow. and incline them towards socialism. And then there was a second book in 1930 by Austrian economist Joseph Schumpeter, and he said exactly the same thing in 1930. He said mass college is creating a bunch of people who are psychically unemployable, and it inclines them towards socialism. And here's the thing.
Wow.
In 1896, Gustave Le Bon said that he was like, we should be doing apprenticeship programs like in America. He was like, nobody's starving in America. You know, he was like, Americans make 2 to 3 times the wages that we make. He was like, we need to stop teaching kids, you know, medieval poetry or the sex lives of hippos, and teach them how to, like, build things, teach them how to make things, teach them how to do, you know, carpentry or woodwork or, you know, whatever.
Plumbing, how to produce. You know? Don't be a consumer. Yeah. Be a producer.
Be productive.
Produce something.
Yep. Yeah, and so Schumpeter, by the way, that was Gustave Le Bon, but back to 1930 and Schumpeter. Schumpeter said that these people will become kind of like, this is how he puts it. He says that he said, for instance, in the labor movement, he said the labor movement never asked for intellectuals, but it's going to attract these displaced college graduates who are just looking for a job. So they're going to try to frame themselves as the spokesperson for the labor movement. And then he said, once those goals are achieved in the labor movement, they're going to go to racial justice movement. And he said, once those goals are achieved, you're going to find them going to fringe, you know, fringe lifestyle. You know, they're going to suddenly be. He was saying this in 1930. So you see this happening now, where they're, you know, oh, gay rights. Okay, that's been achieved. Okay, trans rights, pedo rights, pedophobe. You know, like you see because they're just desperate, and they just keep fragmenting and turning more and more fringe. So this has been, you know, driven by, you know, social isolation, displacement, economic displacement, no families, you know, the millennials and stuff, you know, and the Zoomers, they have really, really, you know, horrible, you know, marriage rates and home ownership rates and equity rates. And, you know, so they're just adrift. And so, as I said, just psychologically, you've seen this happen before. We've watched this movie before.
What's you know, we had a, we were talking again before the break, or before we came live. And you said you listened to the show sometime. I said, oh, okay, so you probably have heard me 100 times talk about my feeling about school. And so you've listened to me rant about school before, government school. Do you think I am Am I crazy? Am I off my rocker? Am I close? Am I too dramatic? Am I not dramatic enough? I mean, what are your feelings about our state of public school?
One of the books that I'm reading now is Montesquieu from the 1660s, I think, The Spirit of the Laws. And he actually says something really profound. He says that there are three basic forms of government. There's, you know, republic, then there's monarchy, and then he says despotism. And he says that in a republic, people are driven by virtue. He says in a monarchy, people are driven by honor. And he says in a despotism, they rule by fear. They always use fear narratives to kind of control the population. And he says in a republic, the school system should, he said, the chief function of the school system is to teach children to love their country. And he says virtue, he says in a republic, virtue consists of the love of one's country. You know, he says, however, in a despotism, the school system is set up so that the children learn as little as possible and that the system actually encourages them in vice. And he says, this makes bad citizens, but it makes good slaves. You know, so that's how I feel about our school system, like watching it shift from a pro-America school system to a hate-America school system. And it's, you know, and these rule by fear narratives, you know.
When, I want to add something you said about our republic or the republic, our republic, constitutional republic. Cleon Skousen gave one of the most important talks. I think it was in the 60s, I think. I could be wrong. I don't know the date. But he gave one of the most important talks on this subject. He went through the founding fathers, you know, quotes by them, their agenda for the school system. People keep saying that the founding fathers did not want religion taught in school. They do not know what the hell they're talking about. The founding fathers, they wanted, there were five basic tenets of Christianity. Again, of Christianity. Christian religion was the religion of America, and it had to be the religion of the Republic, because as John Adams says, it was for a moral people and no one else. The safety, the future, everything in America depended on there being a level of morality inside the people. Therefore, they deemed that a basic five tenets of Christianity were taught in school, and it was part, like you said, it's part of just our continuation of our republic. That you, one, we are created. We have a creator. It's not a, we don't have to have a evolution or creationist society. It's already been settled in the Declaration of Independence. We are a creationist society. Two, that we are accountable to this creator. Three, that we are accountable to each other in our actions that we do. I can't remember the other two. They wanted those five basic things taught just like English, just like reading, just like writing, in the schools. And at one time, it was taught in the schools. I'm stealing your time here, Daniel, but you got me. This is so clear and so important. This is so important. They keep arguing, and they keep telling you and telling us that, well, the Constitution prohibits prayer in school. The Constitution does this. The Constitution doesn't allow this in school. Yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. Why then, the further you go back in history, the closer you get to the founding fathers, the closer you get to the signing of the Declaration of Independence in this country, were the schools more and more and more and more religious? This is idiocy. This is, you are a damn fool if you say anything to the contrary. I value your opinion zero in historical nature. If you hold to that idea, the further you go back to the Declaration of Independence, the more religious our schools were. I guess they didn't read the Constitution back then. I guess, Daniel. Anyway, I ranted a little bit. We got about 2 minutes before the break. Any comment you have?
No, just the quote that you were alluding to was John Adams, who said that our Constitution was made for a moral and religious people. It is wholly unequal to the government of any other. And in Thomas Paine's Common Sense, he envisioned America as a Christian Sparta. That's the term he used, Christian Sparta. So, yeah, so that was foundational. They believed that the school system was there for character development. The primary purpose of it was character. It wasn't vocational. Like right now, we're like, oh, go to school to be a doctor, go to school to be a lawyer, whatever. No, it was character development. And so, yeah, they took that out. And just really quickly before we go cut to the break, the schools were actually started in the Middle Ages by the church. So the church had always run the schools. I mean, that was the historical norm. It was very unusual and anomalous when I believe it was Bismarck was the first person to pry the schools away from the church in Germany, and he made the state the center of the, you know, and then so we adopted this Prussian school system, you know, in the 20th century, early
1800s.
Yeah, and that's when it changed from church-centric to state-centric, you know.
We got to keep going. We got about a minute and a half. You're doing good.
Oh, okay.
Don't stop.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to calibrate that. Just learning that, like when you learn like the history of schools, you know, like in England, like Henry VIII was in a war with the Catholic Church, and so he kicks out the Catholic Church. And in England, you saw this kind of fight, the struggle between church and state, and Henry, after he kicks out the church, all of a sudden the government starts taking on the roles, like feeding the needy, all the things that the church used to do. All of a sudden, the state started adopting and usurping those roles, and that only happened, you know, to a minimal extent in the 1500s. But by the 19th century, with Germany kind of doing it, and then when Rockefeller wanted to remake the American school system, they used the Prussian model, and that's when that shift happened. You know,
wow.
Where they basically, you know, became this mechanistic kind of robotic, you know, obedience, you know, based school system rather than character development. They wanted to make factory workers. They didn't want to make citizens.
In the First Amendment, why is it talk about religion? Ladies and gentlemen, this is, again, so important. Why is religion specifically mentioned in the First Amendment? No establishment of religion. Congress was to have nothing to do with religion. Why? Because they saw it as a fourth estate with the press also. So a fifth estate. A fourth and fifth estate was the press and religion, that they were institutes of society and that they could not be controlled by the government. They had to be there as a support for the morality of the people and the continuation of freedom. That is why freedom of religion is codified in the First Amendment, ladies and gentlemen, in case you didn't know. Anyway, about 30 seconds, Daniel, any comment?
Yeah, no, I mean, republics can't survive, as John Adams indicated, without an ethical people, without a moral people, without a religious people. There has to be some kind of spiritual core. And that's why the Bill of Rights is all about spiritual things, you know, not the commodities you can hold in your hand, like the crude material of Marxism, you know, but spiritual values like freedom, spiritual values like religion and God and privacy, things you can't hold in your hand, things that are insubstantial. That those were the things that we were promised, because we were seen, we were envisioned as a spiritual people. Once you take that out, then the whole thing collapses.
God almighty. How have you not been on this broadcast before? Woo! Daniel Littall, the new American. He's a guest contributor. He's my new best friend. God dang. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Power Hour. We'll be right back.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, New Man of food storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 228-28 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 228-28. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
You know what my mission was when I started this, and I was so excited. I still am excited after 21 years. I said, anybody who's got mouth must use Vitamer toothpaste and mouthwash if they want to stay healthy. I'm going to make sure that it is available to anywhere I can put the product.
You got a lot of zinc in these products.
Zinc inhibits plaque growth. Zinc is also known to have an antibacterial properties. Also, zinc works to eliminate bad breath by destroying volatile sulfur compounds. Such an incredible product. And
wow.
I'm so proud to say my wife did that and saved my life, saved my mouth. And she is the mother of all the people who are using a Vitamer toothpaste and mouthwash in the world.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Buy from the good guys at theparamol.com. That's theparamol.com.
Spring is here, and so are your allergies. That's why we have quercetin at a 15% discount, available at thepowermall.com. Quercetin, it's a potent antioxidant to support immunity and normal allergen response. Call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Buy from the good guys. Buy from thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. 15% off quercetin this month only at thepowermall.com.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
This has been really fascinating to get to meet Daniel. We're talking to Daniel Latala, the contributor at The New American. We love The New American. Alex Newman and all the like. We've been interviewed several people from there. TheNewAmerican.com contributor Daniel Natal, N-A-T-A-L. You can see his work. We're talking specifically, well, at least we started. We've kind of gone all over the place, but we started talking about School of Darkness. It was a book written, I believe, in the 50s, you said, Daniel, by Bella Dodd, mirroring the communist takeover of society, how they do it, the words they use, and what have you, and into the schools. Is that correct? I'm correct on everything I just said there, or you correct?
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that you just reminded me of, too, was another term that she used along with social justice that we hear today, or white chauvinism, which has become white privilege or white supremacy, was anti-fascism. She said that the goon squads would be deployed and they would beat people up and they would, you know, retroactively just, oh, we were beating up fascists. And she said that they had gotten so good at propaganda that they had stigmatized the word fascism to a public that didn't even know what the word meant. And so, you know, so we're watching this as well, too. I mean, today, like, you can watch, you know, advocates for Antifa, you know, say, oh, yeah, we beat up these fascists. And then you look at who they beat up, and they beat up, like, a flag-waving granny from, like, you know, Moose Jaw, like, Wisconsin or something, you know, who was nobody's idea of a fa- you know. And that's – so you look at those tactics that were used back in the 20s and 30s where just violence was meted out upon people, especially nationalist movements. They didn't want nationalist movements because, you know, it made it harder for them to operate, you know. Like, a strong people was not in their benefit, you know, not to their benefit. So they would do everything they could. There was a gentleman who wrote a book called Antifa, the Anti-Fascist Handbook. What's his name? I think it's Mark Bray, I think it is. And he just goes out, you know, just, oh, yeah, the fascists, and we beat up the we physically disrupted the fascists. And then you ask him, okay, what does physically disrupt mean? And he was like, oh, beat the crap out of people, you know. And so you see these things in the 20s, you know, that they were doing.
What country was she, Bella Dodd, what country was she talking? Was she talking about Germany or Russia, or what was she talking about?
No, she was in the United States in the 20s and 30s. She was an Italian originally, and she immigrated to the United States as, I think, she was six. and she grew up here. But like many kind of lost, isolated individuals, and you see this as a theme too with the people who are kind of drawn toward radicalism, is that they're unmoored. They're kind of spiritually lost. They're adrift. And so she was really isolated because she couldn't speak the language very well, and she felt, you know, incongruous. And so when people came up to her, and they were also kind of lost souls, and they were also, you know, people who were cut off from the mainstream, and they were very radicalized, and they were like, hey, come be our friend, you know. And so she was just a prey to that, and she just got sucked into it. And like a lot of the things she describes as well, she describes the suicide of a teacher who helped radicalize her when she was, I believe it was Hunter College in New York. And the woman ends up committing suicide. You know, she's just a depressive person. And so Bella Dodd is talking about her mental deterioration, her mental breakdown. Like the more she becomes a radical. And in one of the videos I did, I was showing, you know, it's a meme now. I mean, where you'll see girls going to college and they're normal, functional girls. And then, you know, within a year, their heads are shaved. They've got tattoos on their foreheads. They look like Manson cult members, you know, like just MK Ultra, vacant-eyed, you know, just warriors for the revolution, you know. And you saw these same things happening in the 20s, you know, not to that extent, you know. I mean, it's really been refined since, you know, I seemingly jokingly said Manson, but there are some kind of suggestions that, you know, that these intelligence agencies may be having a hand in some of this, you know, this stuff as well.
There's been a lot of connection between Charles Manson and the in the intelligence community, that they were running experiments through him and it got out of hand or whatever. Tate, what's her name? Sharon Tate.
Sharon Tate, yeah.
I mean, that's a whole nother.
And Jim Jones,
that's right.
Yeah, the Kool-Aid. Those things, the CIA was doing experiments on how not just to brainwash an individual, but how do you brainwash a whole community? And so they were doing these experiments on how to do it. So when you look at like the shaven heads of the females and Manson's cult, and you look at like the shaven headed girls with tattoos on their foreheads and, you know, Berkeley, you know, with these triggered eyes and just this penchant for violence and wanting to stab people, you know, and it's hard to miss the similarities, you know, between what's been done, and they've become very successful at it, because now we have institutions kind of, you know, teachers giving kids extra credit to go join mobs and you know, break things. And like the one guy who hit an American on the head with a bike lock, and it turned out to be the professor at the college. You know, so the people who should be responsible adults are the people who are encouraging these young kids to like be violent, you know, for the revolution, of course.
There's a scripture in the Bible. I can't remember. It's Isaiah. I can't remember. I'm sure the audience would know it. It says, if they're not going to believe truth, I'll send delusion. So it's almost like delusion is set over these people's minds. We got to come to an agreement. We got to come to some. There is no compromise. There is no common ground. There is no agreement. I mean, what I'm seeing, these people you're describing, one, their numbers are growing. Two, there is no compromise with them. You either join them or you're the enemy. You're either with them or against them. Maybe we should have that. Maybe liberty people should have that attitude. I don't know. Your thoughts on any of that?
No, I agree. I did a video on, it was called Bargaining with a Chimp. And I was just, the premise of it was, I was reading a book called Friendship by Lydia Denworth, and she was talking about how, like, empathy, like the origins of empathy. And we have something in our brains called mirroring neurons. And mirroring neurons are the things in babies that cause them to imitate their parents, that cause them to imitate speech or walking or whatever. And so we all have these mirroring neurons, and they're central to empathy. They're central to ethics. You know, I'm not going to be mean to this other person because it viscerally, you know, vicariously hurts me to see them in pain. Well, sociopaths have fewer mirroring neurons. Chimps have fewer mirroring neurons. I start the video with a guy named Winthrop Kellogg, I believe it's Niles Winthrop Kellogg. And he did an experiment in the 30s where he took his son, his newborn son, and he got a chimp the same age. And he was going to raise the chimp to see, along with the son, to see if the chimp could be humanized, could be civilized. And he stopped the experiment because it wasn't the chimp that was imitating his son. His son started imitating the chimp. And that makes sense if you understand mirror neurons, which we didn't discover till the 1990s. This guy was in 1932. And so the human having more mirror neurons will actually, to be able to communicate, he'll actually dumb himself down to communicate. And my point in the video was, why do we keep moving to the left as a country? Why is the Republican Party to the left of the Democratic Party in 1990? You know, you see these Republicans with rainbow flags, and, you know, it's the base transsexual. You know? You see this shift toward left. And my answer to that was, it's like bargaining. It's like the little kid with the chimp, right? So if you're trying to bargain with a sociopath, you think in your mind, hey, I'm going to meet him halfway and he'll meet me halfway. But that never happens. Look, I'm going to meet him with gay marriage and he's going to meet me and he's going to support, you know, Second Amendment. Okay, he didn't. Okay, well, I'm going to meet him with, you know, whatever, the normalization of transsexuals or castrating children. I'm going to meet him halfway and he's going to be for securing the borders. Okay, I gave him everything he wanted. He gave me nothing. You know, because you're basically bargaining with a sociopath. You're bargaining with someone who doesn't have empathy. People who would advocate the castration of children don't have empathy. People who carry signs saying, you know, I'm against pedophobes. You know, like you can see these. I can send one to you, you know, on a college campus saying we're against pedophobes. You know, so these are sociopaths. These are not good people. So when you keep bargaining with them, you keep moving in their direction, and they never move in yours, because that's how a sociopath works. He's not empathetic. He doesn't mirror you. He doesn't know how. You can yawn. He's not going to yawn back. You know, like the normal human reflexive reactions don't work with these people. So you're seeing the right has to stop this insanity. They have to stop bargaining with sociopaths.
I will say something. I'm a little, I don't know if respect is the word. I don't know what the word is. I mean, I look at some of the things they've accomplished and I'm a little envious. Like, why aren't we that adamant? Why aren't Christians that adamant about school? It's like I hear Christian parents, well, in school, you know, they're doing this and gosh, I really don't like, and I just like, what in the God's name are you talking about? If my child came home and told me that they told her in school that she didn't have a gender and that her parents assigned her a gender and she could choose her. If my child told me, I would lose my ever loving mind. I would lose my mind. I wouldn't sit there like a Stockholm victim and just, well, I guess that's the way it is. We're just, God, that's not right the way they're doing that. God Almighty, why are we, where did this victimhood come from, Daniel?
I don't know. You're talking to somebody who's actually caught up in that. I was talking to my cousin Richie, who I hadn't talked to for years. And he told me on the phone, I was, oh, Rich, how you doing? And he starts telling me that both of his young daughters are lesbians. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, don't worry. I mean, people kind of go through stages. They say, oh, no, I'm all right with it. You know, they went to school and they found out that, you know, the genders were assigned or whatever. And he goes through the spiel. And I'm like, well, why don't you kind of fight back on that? Why don't you advocate for your kids? Because there are health implications. I mean, kids who, you know, pursue that path, I mean, statistically, male homosexuals die 22 years younger than straight counterparts. With lesbians, it's 11 years younger. For smoking, to put that in context, it's 8 years. It shaves 8 years off your life. Right. So I'm like,
hold on. Did you just say being gay is worse than smoking? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, look it up. Look it up. There's been three studies on it, and it's based on obituaries where they'll look at the totality of the straight people who are dying. Like, for instance, Philip McKean, the TV star from Alice, he played Tommy on Alice. And he died just recently, and he led a very private life. He didn't, you know, ever marry or was ever seen with a girl. And he dies, and everybody's, oh, he died. And so I looked at his death date. It was 55. He died at the age of 55 of an undisclosed disease. So I looked at, you know, 55. Oh, wow, what's the average age of male death? It's 77. He died 22 years before the national average for straight males. And that's so there are health implications that they're not kind of telling these kids. They're lying to them. Like, most of the stuff in our society now is there's no consequences. You know, don't consequences, schmonsequences, whether it's balancing the budget for the nation. nutrition or whether it's, you know, kind of, you know, lifestyle choices, this lie, this persistent lie that you can do whatever you want, and you'll end up at the same, you know, goal as the other person. And it's like Marcus Aurelius said, that the Roman emperor, right? He said, there are no punishments, there are just consequences. You know, so if you just told kids consequences, rational, logical consequences, let them make their own decisions, but at least tell them. But in talking to my cousin about this, I was like, well, you know, you have a right to form your children's character. It's not, you know, he's, oh, I can't get involved. I know the script. I just want my children to be happy. They told me what to say. So that's the script. And I'm going to say that. And I have no right to interfere. I was like, but the school has a right to interfere. The school has a right to shape your kid's character, but you don't.
Yeah. You got it. How old are these children?
One of them is, I believe, 8, and the other is 11.
What did you just say?
8 and 11. Yeah, my jaw dropped as well.
What in the hell did you just say, Daniel?
Well, they're giving them, like, look, think of all the ways that they're monetizing, you know, what's happening, right?
Hold on. God almighty, I'm about to lose it. I thought you were talking about these were kids that like were in university. They're like 23 years old. When you said this story, that's what I thought you were telling me.
This is in liberal New Jersey.
I don't even know what to say. You're telling me the 8-year-old comes home and I'm a lesbian.
Yep. And if you're a lesbian, nobody can criticize you. If you're just like, you know, an awkward, chubby little girl who's a nerd, then, you know, you're made fun of, you're bullied. Oh, but if you're a lesbian who's a chubby nerd, then if anybody criticizes you, they get in trouble. Now you've got power.
Where is your, I don't want to make light of your cousin, but I mean, is your cousin a Christian? I mean, is he an atheist?
When he was younger, he used to be, and he fell away. And he, like many people, kind of life just, you know, he got lost in working and kind of television and, you know, just his values.
And consumption.
Just, you know, went astray. Well, and he also had his sister who went to college and discovered she was gay in college. And so the sister, I think, influenced his, you know, his subsequent, like, he used to be against all that stuff. But then he started saying, oh, but it's okay now. The TV says so. It's okay now.
Okay,
so
well,
that really affected his passivity, you know.
Look, I want to be clear because I don't want to get emails and all this. I want to be clear. Look, I have family members who are homosexual or say they're homosexual, what have you. I love them, whatever. I'm not losing my mind because somebody says they're gay. I'm losing my mind because an 8-year-old goes to school and they say they're gay. That 8 years old shouldn't even know about anything about sex. An 8-year old should be talking, you know, to their stuffed animals, having tea parties with their Barbies, you know, riding their bikes and playing with their friends on the jungle gym. That's what an 8-year old should be doing. I'm like this close to losing it right now, Daniel. For everybody who's listening, you know, sometimes I try not to preach to you. I try not to get in my soapbox, but I'm about to get in my soapbox. If you're a Christian and this matters to you, I don't know what else you want me to say to you. And you talk about, well, the state of our country, oh, this is, no. The state of your family. Look at your family. I have to look, me personally, I do, Daniel Brigman, the host of this show, I have to go look in the mirror and say, just like Catherine Austin Fitz, I have to come clean. What am I doing to contribute to the destruction of our country? What am I doing to the destruction of our nation, our world, my family? What am I doing? And if any in that discussion, in that line of thinking, public school comes up, I promise you, you are destroying your family if you are subjecting your child to this and laying them on the altar of whatever you want to call it, a public school, of social justice, of public good. If these values matter to you, they're having condom relay races in schools at 10 years old, okay? They're telling 4- and 5-year-olds that your parents picked your gender. The child, it's not a boy or female. They get to pick their gender. They get to decide, not your parents. They're telling them that. It is hard to have anything that's more destructive to a developing mind than to have these ideas. And if that offends somebody, I don't give a damn. That offends you? I'm trying to help you. And if you if that offends you and that bothers you, there's other shows you can listen to. I don't care. I will not compromise on certain things, and this is one of them. And if you don't get it, if the 5-6 years that I've been on this damn radio and explaining these things to you and talking about this, if you don't get one thing in your mind, please get this. The school system is there to destroy the moral fabric of this society and to move us into a planned society where the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence is gone, and we go to a common good, a socialist slash communist society. Okay? If you get nothing else ever from listening to this broadcast, and get that in your mind, and you want to do something, and you want to do something for your health, and you want to do something for your future, and you want to make money, and you want to do all these things, all great. Nothing is more important than the ideas you put into your future generation's mind. America is an idea, ladies and gentlemen. Religion is a conviction. It is an idea. And you're going to sacrifice your child's future on the altar of these communists and these reprobates in school? And, oh, well, Johnny's teacher's, I don't give a damn if you think Johnny's teacher's nice and sweet and all this and really cares for it. And all those things may be true. Johnny's teacher works for the devil. Okay? Johnny's teacher works for the devil. All right? Go ahead. Yeah, I don't know if I've offended you, Daniel, if you want to comment at all. I've lost my mind. Go ahead.
No, you're speaking of the choir. That's one of the reasons, by the way, that Bella Dodd quit the Communist Party is because she started realizing, like she was told, oh, we're here to help the working class against the evil capitalists, and we're going to help these working men, these longshoremen, these plumbers, these carpenters. But the more she started, rising in the hierarchy, she started realizing that they didn't have any plans to help anybody, that, in fact, they were sabotaging people. They were creating systems, to create dysfunctional people, people who couldn't fit in anywhere. And they said, yes, we need these useful idiots. You don't understand, Bella, she was told. We're not here to patch the system. We're here to destroy it. And so she realized they were here to hurt the people. And this is, because their end goal was power. Their end goal was not helping, like the little guy. Their end goal was creating destruction. Their end goal was subverting the society, and turning these people into cannon fodder, turning them into useful idiots. And she didn't want to have anything more to do with it because it's just profoundly unethical. And that's what we're watching. I mean, we're watching the school system where they're not doing anything to conduce toward creating productive, functional, successful citizens. They're doing things to create victims, even to the point, it's a victim hierarchy. Everybody gets points based on victimhood. Oh, well, I got a grant or got a scholarship on my victim status. They're monetizing victimhood. So these people who aren't statistically historical victims, like say you're like I used the example before of the chubby white girl, right? If you can't jump on the victim bandwagon, oh, but if you're gay, you can. Here you go, and you'll get grants and stuff. They've monetized victimhood. They've monetized. And that's the thing. Conservatives, they believe in making you not a victim, right? On the left, they've actually monetized victimhood. So the more dysfunctional you are, the more of an oddball you are, the more, kind of unfit you are, the more you're praised.
The more separated from societal norms, the more different, the more... Yeah. Against societal norms. So we're trying to break down society, so we're going to emphasize against societal norms. We got a caller. Let's see what the caller has to say. Maybe they can get this show back on the rails. I don't know. Alan in Texas, you're live on the air, my friend. You're live. What's on your mind?
Good day, 2250 and Daniel. Thank both of you, Daniels, for putting the truth out. Yes, Daniel Brigman, I love your passion. The other Daniel, I love your passion. We need to try to turn this around. What is going on is completely wrong. The family is this country. The country is nothing without the family. What they're doing to our children, I don't have children myself, but I see it around me, and I have compassion. I don't like it, if nothing else, because I can't live the comfortable life that I want to lead with this crap going on. Thank you for doing what you're doing. Daniel, you know I love you, man. I call you 2250. Some longtime listeners know why that is, and the degradation of our society is just amazing, and it's sick to sit back here and watch this and be damn near helpless to try to do anything about it. We can save some people, but on a majority, man, we're fighting a big battle. I appreciate everything y'all are doing. Thank you.
Stay there, Alan. Stay there, Alan. Thank you for the kind comments. I think he hung up. If you take a bucket, ladies and gentlemen, go drill three big, pretty good sized holes in it, and now pour water in that bucket and see how much water stays in the bucket. We're leaking. And you want to start where this all starts, and you can talk about the church, and you talk about how important the Bible is, and all these things are true. This morality, let's just put it as morality, because some people don't like church. Some people don't even like the Bible. Okay, let's just talk about morality. Okay, morality is the foundation and basis of a good society, and certainly our society, and a Christian morality was the basis of America. Period. End of story. Anybody says different, just go to hell. I don't even care. Just go to hell. Okay? It's time. We are at that point, ladies and gentlemen, to start getting pissed off. Okay? We gotta get some conviction here. We gotta get some oomph in our sentiment. Okay, when you send your children to school, you are destroying all that morality. Period. I don't want to hear it. I don't sit there and justify to me. Don't sit there and tell me anything different. Point blank. My father taught me to be, let's get to the facts. Let's get straight down to the facts. You want to know where the bane of our existence in this country, the problem institutionally with our country, is the school system, period, end of story, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. Now, you can argue the churches, but there's not a public type institution. That's what I mean. The public institution, the problem is the schools, period. Anyway, go ahead, Daniel. We got about 2-3 minutes.
No, I was just going to say there's a great quote from Malcolm X, and he says, only a fool allows his enemy to educate his children.
Bam. And I don't, that, yeah, you won't, yeah, you won't that, listen to me, listen to Malcolm X.
and that's really what happened. I mean, we were so used to this pre-World War II school system that was still teaching patriotism, even, in the years after World War II, in the 50s, 60s, you saw everybody in crew cuts and saluting the flag and going to church and stuff. And so people had this, like, lagover effect where they assumed that it was still that, and they were kind of, like, not aware that radicals were seating in the system after World War II. And they started, getting up the hierarchy, and they started taking over by the 70s, 80s, 90s. And they're suddenly the professors of the universities. They're suddenly the people setting the syllabus, and and we weren't aware of what the children were being taught. And this came to the fore with COVID, when all of a sudden kids had to do Zoom lessons from home, and the teachers were tweeting that they were terrified of the parents seeing what they were teaching the kids, because they knew, wow. They knew that it was unacceptable, and they were terrified. And I was like, if you're not doing anything wrong, why are you afraid of transparency? Why would you possibly be afraid of the parents seeing you teach the kids about, mathematics or trigonometry or whatever, literature? Why are you afraid? And it's because they're not. And in one of the tweets, one of the teachers even says that, because we've got to disrupt, things for social justice.
There's the music. Turn that down just a second. My grandfather was born about 100 years ago. He said, Danny, do you know what makes America different? I said, what? He said, in America, our rights come from God, not man, and man can't take them away. And then he said, and they taught me that in school. Please, for the love of God, find me a child going to public school for the last 50 years who can say that. Please find me that. If you can't, that's why you need to get your children the hell out of school. I don't know what more else to say. You want to do something to save your future? Get your kids out of the goddamned school. Okay? Love you. Happy, healthy, successful, and free as God intends you. Daniel Littal, excellent to meet you. Excellent to have you on. I hope to have you on again, my friend.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much, Daniel.
Stay there.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.